So now we will continue with the Gemini chapter. We ended on page 351, and we were looking at something very interesting here relating Cancer to the physical sun, the third aspect, intelligent activity of the whole, also to earlier mass consciousness. But Cancer is appreciably a sign of intelligence, as is Virgo, and related to a solar system, the previous great solar system, in which intelligence was paramount. Intelligence and, I suppose, personality activity. Gemini related to our present solar system, I would say, very much so. And to the heart of the sun, not just to the etheric heart center on the monadic plane of our solar logos, but the second aspect and the love of the whole. God is love. Aquarius, then, we wonder, will Aquarius then be related to the first ray, because it is related to the first aspect. And here we have a constellation which may be very active in the next solar system. And will we learn something about the coming solar system? Something about the coming solar system when we enter these great Aquarian periods? Maybe. Already DK is telling us something about them, a little bit. So we're beginning here on page 351 with 101B. Through these signs, the three major aspects of divinity are at this time. Notice always the relativity, are at this time focused. Because it's a situation of constant change and mutability according to laws and cycles of which we have very little, well, we have no knowledge, really. DK drops an occasional hint of these larger cycles, but what do we know other than what he has given? The astrologers in the great department of hierarchy, they are the ones who know. In casting the horoscope of the planet, a thing that has never yet been accurately done owing to the lack of available data to the esoteric astrologer, I guess this suggests that some have tried. It could be done by those in the hierarchical department of astrology. It is the influence of these three constellations which will be found of dominating importance. And yet we're told that Libra is growing in power in the planetary horoscope. But okay, dominating importance. So, what can we say? That one will be like the sun sign. The sun was in Gemini when a certain thing happened. That the moon was in Cancer. I'm not even sure what these things mean. That the ascendant was somehow Aquarius? Or would we do it in terms of the triple sun? Would we say that somehow the sun was in Cancer? The ascendant was in Gemini. And the point opposite the sun sign was in Aquarius. But with that can't really be. You can't do that. Because the sign opposite the sun sign, if it was Cancer, would be Capricorn, wouldn't it? So we can't work it out with these constellations in terms of the triple sun. We cannot talk about sun sign, point opposite sun sign, and ascendant. So let's just say, using these constellations, we cannot work out a, what can we call it, triple sun solution. We can suggest a sun, moon, rising sign solution in which the sun would be in Cancer. No, that wouldn't be the way. The moon in Cancer, fittingly. The sun in Gemini. It's not quite satisfactory. and the ascendant in Aquarius. But of course, this also is the wildest speculation, and not really admissible in a serious attempt to do this. We have to know the point of the point when the causal body of our solar logos was formed, but on the other hand, no, our planetary logos, but on the other hand, that causal body had to have existed before in a previous solar system, so that won't do. We have to know perhaps when the actual birthing of the physical planet took place, also the periods of appropriation of the mental body, emotional body, and etheric body would be nice to know, but the position of our planet relative to the sun and the zodiac when the actual birth or the physicalization of our planet occurred. No wonder we are in no position to do this. In Cancer, you have the intelligent synthetic consciousness of the mass, viewing it from the consciousness of matter itself and the awareness of all forms and atoms. Something here to do with the anima mundi, soul of form, as soul is consciousness. So intelligent synthetic consciousness of the mass. How intelligent? Self-conscious or only intelligent? It's possible to be intelligent without being self-conscious, is it not? It's possible to be intelligent without being self-conscious. It seems, viewing it from the consciousness of matter itself, which is intelligent, and the awareness of forms and atoms. Let's see, we'll look a little bit above here. Physical sun, intelligent activity, the whole, but on the other hand, there is a personality aspect of the solar logos. So we'll ask that question. But is the personality aspect of the solar logos involved in the Cancerian type of consciousness? Therefore, consciousness of the matter-form aspect of the solar system, including the etheric body of the solar system. In Gemini, you have an emerging, see who's doing the recognizing here? Is it the solar logos? Your intelligent synthetic consciousness of the mass, viewing it from the consciousness of matter itself, and the awareness of all forms and atoms. Well, this looks like, you know, in one sense, solar logoic consciousness. We're dealing with the three aspects of the sun. They are all of them intelligent. The solar logos is intelligent, intelligently aware on every level. So we're looking at possibly the physicalized consciousness of the solar logos, let us say. That's another way of looking at it. Otherwise, we're just dealing with the anima mundi. We are possibly looking at the physicalized consciousness of the solar logos. In Gemini, or under the influence of Gemini, you have an emerging recognition of duality leading to experience and growth in all separate intelligent forms. So from one perspective, okay, let's look at this. From one perspective, the solar logos is becoming aware of the higher of his pairs of opposites. We're looking at this mostly in the macrocosmic sense, and obviously we know that Gemini relates to mass consciousness, Cancer to mass consciousness, and Gemini to consciousness of the soul, the higher the pairs of opposites, and Aquarius may well be one of the revealers of the monad. That's on the microcosmic level. Macrocosmically, we're looking at what the planetary logos of the solar logos would detect when under the influence of these signs. Okay, so through interplay, through the leading to experience and growth, and I would say through interplay, which is Geminian, in all separate intelligent forms. And the solar logos has this sense. And not all separative intelligent forms, well, they may not yet sense the duality, but the solar logos certainly does, and man at a certain level of evolution senses the duality. In Aquarius, you have the results of the activity of Cancer and Gemini. This can be applied microcosmically too, producing a higher synthesis and a universal group awareness. The solar logos knows his entire system. This has a microcosmic reflection in the initiate. Universal group awareness, not just group awareness, but group awareness throughout the solar system, which is universal consciousness in terms of Aquarius. So this, the intelligent student can trace with moderate facility in relation to humanity. It's developing mass consciousness, it's developing soul consciousness, it's eventual developing divine or spirit consciousness, but applies equally to all forms and all kingdoms of nature and also to the planetary and solar expression. So, okay, DK tells us he is giving us several levels in which the Cancer, Gemini, Aquarius triplicity applies. So planetary and solar expression in terms of the planetary and solar logos, but also to the various kingdoms of nature, which may be self-conscious, superconscious, or also unconscious. The unconscious part would be harder to trace, I guess, for Gemini and Aquarius. I suppose it would have something to do with the scope of intelligent contact. So it seems that we, you know, I could be wrong here, but it seems that we are speaking of the developing consciousness of the solar logos under the influence of these great cosmic zodiacal lords, giving, in a way, the solar logos personality consciousness, then consciousness of the soul, then consciousness of himself as a triple being, including his divine aspect or monad or spirit. Is he there yet? That's the question. He seems... Our solar logos has not yet taken his third initiation, which means he is in the Gemini phase. He is aware of the great pairs of opposites, and he is aware of having them control his physical and astral nature, but he is not yet an illumined third-degree cosmic initiate. We're told he is moving towards that, at which time Aquarius would be important. And I wonder, you kind of wonder, during this age of Aquarius on Earth, whether some movement is not going to occur towards that. Of course, it would happen more, maybe. No, it has to happen in this solar system, it does. Because he has to take the fourth cosmic initiation, minimally, or the fifth in this solar system, and that means he has to pass through the transfiguration, he has to become aware of his monadic nature, and Aquarius will facilitate this. Aquarius, in a way, you know, it shows up at different microcosmic initiations. It shows up in purifications, you know, cleansing the Augean stables at the second degree. It shows up in a kind of a incipient universality of consciousness where the whole is seen as one, a Cancerian idea, but an Aquarian achievement at the third degree. It shows up in being the sacrificial server, the man for all seasons, pouring out in sacrifice everything that one has at the fourth degree. It also shows up in terms of the radiance of the highest head center, probably in the Maya Varupa, but the radiance of the entire head center at mastership. when there's a complete synthesis within the head center of all potentials. So second, third, fourth, and fifth degrees are strongly Aquarian. I don't know so much about the first degree, except that the etheric body is involved, and Aquarius is related strongly to the etheric body. Okay, the proved reality of this is one of the developments of the initiatory process at the end of the long, long path of evolution. So maybe some secrets of the higher initiations. The proved reality of the kind of consciousness on the microcosmic level produced. Consciousness of the personality and all of its matter form and its vehicles. Dualistic consciousness of the soul in relation to the personality. Eventual consciousness of monadic influence infusing the soul-infused personality. This would be the microcosmic proof. And probably there is a more planetary and solar macrocosmic proof as well. When it comes to seeing how these things might work in relation to the lower kingdoms of nature, I'm afraid, as DK says, that such consciousness is outside our range. And so is not really re-attainable. We may have passed through those phases during the in-metallization, in-vegetalization, in zoonation of the monad, but we're not passing through them now, and it's very hard for us to regather those phases of consciousness, though maybe the ones who are working in the scientific ashrams on the fifth ray or seventh ray and on the higher mental plane, maybe they can come close to understanding more experientially of the soul of matter, the anima mundi. Attraction and repulsion are therefore conditioning factors in our solar life, because it's a love-wisdom system, and because Gemini, sign of attraction and repulsion, is so strongly conditioning this particular solar system in which the soul is to be revealed, much along the fixed cross in a cosmic sense. I mean, our solar logos is on the cardinal cross, but when looking at the phase of the cardinal cross development, there's probably immutable cross, fixed cross, and cardinal cross phases of his general cardinal cross development. And so he seems to be on the fixed cross part of the cosmic cross in which the soul has to emerge. And this conditioning reaches us through Gemini, attraction and repulsion. So you kind of wonder, I mean, Scorpio is involved, I suppose, in this law of the soul on the microcosmic level called the law of repulse. But you do wonder whether, since the law of repulse is an aspect of the law of love, could Gemini also be involved in the law of repulse? Could Gemini be involved in the law of repulse? Could it be? Scorpio and the fourth ray seem involved in the law of sacrifice. Pisces in the law of service. Libra in the law of magnetic impulse, also called the law of polar union. And maybe there will be for the law of repulse, attraction and repulsion, some Geminian association, could be. It is the effect of a cosmic energy at presently unknown to humanity. So Gemini is definitely a cosmic energy. Definitely a cosmic energy. Attraction and repulsion are therefore conditioning factors in our solar life. And through desire, there's a kind of selectivity that occurs through affinity and a rejection of that which is disaffinate, or for which one has disaffinity. And Gemini, I think, is involved in this repulsion of that which for which one does not have affinity. So there's a separation going on according to affinity, according to the law of attraction and repulsion. It seems like Gemini is very closely related to this great cosmic law. So let's just put that down. Gemini as closely related to the law of attraction and repulsion. Because the second ray can be involved in a kind of repulsion where that which is not harmonious is not attracted and therefore set to the side. The waxing and the waning light, which distinguishes soul experience from the first faint move towards incarnation and earth experience, even there, move towards incarnation and earth experience, let's just say, here's the question, has individualization occurred? Has occurred? Or is it the move before incarnation has occurred, or the first faint moves in the early incarnations, repeating incarnations and earth experience? We don't know, but it looks like incarnation has begun. So whatever the soul is, its influence waxes and wanes, even in the early days. The rise and fall of civilizations, falling, I suppose, when they come under elemental influence, and rising when they come under soul influence. There seems to be no way for forms not to de-aggregate. Death crumbles all, as it says in the six trumpeted words. Word number six, death crumbles all. So the rise and fall of civilizations and the growth and unfoldment of all psychic manifestations are produced by the interplay between the two brothers. I guess I'm realizing something here. Maybe the Castor and Pollux. Interesting that Pollux is generally representing the personality and said to have six pairs of stars. How about these pairs? How do they work? Do they work like this, that two represent monad atma, two represent buddhi manas, two represent the astral and the physical combination? Anyway, there's a one. Pollux is a supergiant one. So and Castor, even though Castor has a reputation of producing more favorable human results, probably because of the personal bias that we have, Castor represents the lower six subplanes, I suppose. So all these vicissitudes in our solar system, whereby things come together and things fall apart, are apparently under the influence of Gemini. So in our solar system, and maybe more, but anyway, our solar system, when things come together and things fall apart, it is the result of the Geminian influence in the constellation Gemini. So all waxing and waning, all aggregation and de-aggregation, all attraction and eventual repulsion between the factors that are attracted, all these are coming in under Gemini. Now you kind of wonder which one of the twins does what. Does Pollux contribute to the cohesion? Does Castor contribute to the de-aggregation? Or maybe it's not quite as simple as that. But generally, civilizations rise when the soul is on the waxing cycle. And they fall apart when there's a waning cycle and the personality is taking over again, which might be the different factors in the star caster. Stars caster, the six of them, taking over again. Great controlling influences exist, and we sense them in our little physical lives, but they are caused by cosmic causes, which in their turn are effects of still greater cosmic causes. The chain of causality goes all the way back to the universal logos, and what causes the universal logos except this habitual perpetual motion, pulsation within the only thing that is. And that pulsation is uncaused and has gone on forever. And so puts itself beyond the range of human understanding. Although it must have been human beings who speculated about this, or maybe still greater beings who knew something and brought their knowledge down to the level of human beings. But I kind of wonder, how can any being within that minuscule representation called the universe know anything about the absolute? How can the absolute be understood whatsoever by any definite being? Because the absolute is the ultimate indefiniteness. So in that far-off time, when the greater round of the zodiac, that's the Platonic year, right? When the greater round of the zodiac was started in Gemini, so this is a greater round started in the Platonic year, ruled by Gemini, as it now is in Pisces. So, you know, how far back are we going to go? Oh, well, we have Pisces, but we would have to go back Pisces 25,000, Aquarius 50, Pisces 25,000, Aries 50,000, Taurus 75,000, Gemini 100,000. But is that far enough? Maybe. So this would be about, obviously, just approximations, about 100,000 years ago. There was a relation between the waxing and the waning moon due to the pulsating power of Gemini. Now, you know, you kind of wonder, if we go back to Lemurian times, there have probably been quite a number of these greater ages of Gemini. So we don't know. It sounds more like a Lemurian condition when things had much more to do with the dense physical nature ruled by the moon. 100,000 years ago was still an Aryan time when the Chaldean races would still have been thriving, the Egyptian races still earlier, but would have been thriving probably. Were the Celtic, were the Arabic races emerging? We'd have to consult Philip Lindsay on this. He has a much better idea of these great cycles when it comes to the root races. Maybe every one of them being in a way 250,000 years. I mean, was this actually in fifth sub-race times, the Teutonic times? I know that some of the types who engineered the whole response to the Black Lodge in Nazi times felt that the Teutonic race had gone back 250,000 years. Maybe there was something to justify that in the secret doctrine. This could have been relatively modern times, 100,000 years ago. So maybe we're talking about a relation between the waxing and waning moon, which is much older. Maybe a much older relation from Lemurian times. Anyway, this is now greatly lessened owing to the removal of the responsive life from the moon. in that far-off time when the greater round of the zodiac was started in Gemini, is there an implication here that the responsive life of the moon was still present at this time? Now that is an interesting consideration, because the moon chain came to an abrupt end. And was this caused, did this occur when there was earth chain functioning, or did it occur before there was the kind of earth chain functioning, before the planetary round, what's it called? The chain, the globe, the chain, and the planetary level, the planetary round, what's it called? Yeah, this is called a scheme round, yes. So before the scheme round, whichever scheme round it was, reached our Earth, was not the responsive life of the moon removed? So greatly lessened from a time when there was responsive life on the moon, and then we have to go back very, very far, but presumably this is occurring at a time when there are developments going on our fourth globe in this fourth chain. So the waxing and the waning moon, due to the pulsation of Gemini, there was a relation. This is now greatly lessened. And what does now mean? Does now mean on our globe and in our chain? What does now actually mean here? Owing to the removal of the responsive life from the moon. So on our globe and on our chain, the waxing and waning moon having this effect due to the pulsation of Gemini is much lessened. But I suppose in old moon chain days, it was very strong. But we would not have seen the waxing and waning moon from from the moon chain alone. We would have had to have been positioned on our planet. So the waxing and waning moon, to see the waxing and waning, means that there had to be process going on our globe and in our chain, on our chain. So then the question is, when really was the life removed from the moon? Responsive life. Was it removed while the earth chain process on our globe was occurring, or before? It does seem that if the waxing and waning moon are involved, it has to have been from the perspective of our globe, and therefore this removal of life possibly occurred even after our globe was existing. I think it always exists, really, but during the planetary scheme, but after the processes on our globe had been occurring. So, but the rhythm then set up remains. So this is now, and, you know, presumably on our globe and on our chain, in our chain, owing to the removal of the responsive life from the moon, but the rhythm then set up, maybe in early days of our globe, remains, producing the same basic illusion. So the rhythmic reflection is producing illusion, even though, this is really a deep section, the rhythmic reflection exists. even if moon chain events are not occurring. So those early moon chain occurrences, as seen, I suspect, from our Earth globe, were the real thing. And later, now, whatever now means, we have a reflection, but basically tending to hold us in illusion. Hold the perceiver in illusion. And Gemini had a much closer relationship to this. Than apparently it does now. The pulsating power of Gemini was connected with the waxing and waning moon, but now this is much lessened, and the degree to which the pulsating power of Gemini is connected can seem to be more resulting in a kind of reflection. I'm talking here in terms of ancient facts, and not in terms of reflection, as is now the case. I refer to realities and not to shadows. So this is deep, and if you penetrate it, it's telling us a lot of hints about the overlapping nature of the chains. Because after all, look at yourself, look at your energy system, there's never a time when you're a living human being when you don't have seven major chakras, even if they're not all awake or all awakened. They will be somewhat functioning, at least in a sustaining sort of way. Otherwise your organs would not function. So if there are seven chakras in the life of the chain lord, and or let's say the scheme lord, and these chains are chakras, then all of them have to be there functioning in some manner. The moon chain and the earth chain have to be in simultaneous functioning, regardless of what the degree may be. There's kind of an overlap going on here. It seems that life was transferred to the earth. Some of it could be that the earth maybe developed its own type of life, which could observe the waxing and the waning moon, because there is no observation of the waxing and waning moon from the moon chain itself. So that's something I have not realized until this point, or it is at least a line of thought which I think should be pursued. And DK then sort of puts the nail in the coffin here. You know, he's talking about ancient facts, not just 100,000 years ago. Facts, and not in terms of reflection, which is now going on. There is still a perceived waxing and waning moon, but maybe Gemini is not connected. Gemini's pulsations are not connected with the waxing and waning, though according to the waxing and waning, a rhythm within matter is still operating, which is producing the same basic illusion. This is an illusion which has not yet been dispelled. Facts, and not in terms of reflection. So I guess going deeply into these paragraphs may reveal something that we had not suspected before. All right. Well, you know, opening up a subject, the question has been, in theosophical terms, does each chain succeed the other? Is each chain formed after the other dissipates? And maybe not. Given the necessary simultaneity of the chakric setup, it couldn't be. Now, when you're dying, of course, the different chakras dissipate. And perhaps you're left with no functioning. As the energy rises towards the head center, that would be the last chakra. But then, of course, you have the chakras in the emotional body and the mental body, which also have to die away as this phohatic, whirling, vorticular energy is gradually withdrawn. But there is no manifested life. I mean, you could see perhaps that there might be a time in the etheric body, the appropriated etheric body on the way into incarnation before conception, when there would be an activation of one descending chakra after another. But once we have that physical body, we've got all seven. So once we have the appearance of the physical body, all seven are functioning. Once we have the appearance of the physical body of the Earth globe, the physical chain, let's call it that, the most physical chain, the fourth chain, then all of the chakras have to be functioning simultaneously. There's much to discuss here, much to explore, because I suppose you need all of the astral chakras functioning before you can begin to have the descent of the etheric chakras. And you probably have to have the mental chakras functioning as well before you can have the astral chakras. So this means that for the different chains that represent these chakras in the planetary scheme, they have to be functioning before you get to the lowest of the chakras, which presumably is the Earth chain from a planetary scheme level. Anyway, I think that much of the sequentiality presented in theosophical models may not really indicate the way things happen. It might be convenient for the concrete mind to think of things in those terms, but may not be convenient, may not be factual, is what I'm saying. Well, you know, our minds can only extend so far, speculatively, into the way these things might operate. But I'm all for the simultaneity of the chakras, all globes having to appear in the manifestation of a chain. And the question is, could there be a dense, can there be earlier chakras existing in the planetary scheme without all seven, since we have kind of a representation of a full etheric system? I think not, but it still requires further examination, because there is such a thing as the descent of the chakras into activity. And at some point, we have to have all seven functioning, don't we? So there just cannot be, you know, one, then one disappears and two comes. It's not that way in the human energy system, is it? Even on the etheric level. Suppose we imagine the descent of a chakra, that the head center occurred first somehow, and that the other chakras were going to derive from the head center. The head center would not disappear, would it, as chakra number two came into existence, whatever that was, heart or ajna. And the throat center, let's say chakra number three, would not appear after the disappearance of the earlier two. It wouldn't make sense. So the chakras that come in have to remain, don't they? And at some point, all seven have to manifest simultaneously. And when it comes to making the dense physical form of this planetary scheme appear, all seven have to support the dense physical form. And from a certain point of view, which is cosmic, the entire planetary scheme is, or manifests, a dense physical form. Because the dense physical form is mental, emotional, etheric, and astral simultaneously. It's the dense physical body of the dense physical body of the planetary or solar logos. That dense physical body, an aspect of it, is occurring in each one of the chains. Because the chains are not so high that they're not at least touching the mental vehicle, at least the usual chains that we're thinking of. Maybe there are 10, or even 12, as Jeffrey Baborka says, but I think more likely 10. Always an aspect of the dense physical body of the planetary and solar logos are showing. Well, okay, I'm maybe off on a tangent here. But at least it can get us thinking in that direction, right? That's what we want to be able to do. The question is, the simultaneity of the chakras, or their appearance one after another after the previous one disappears, and that model won't work. Because we do not, even in the descent of the chakras, have the disappearance of the emanating chakra. The head center stays, even as the heart or ajna appears. The heart or ajna stays, with the head center staying, even as the throat appears, and so forth. We don't know yet, really, whether the earth chain is a heart chakra or a base of the spine chakra. But it's got to be one of the major seven. So we're into areas here which cannot be, probably if Master KH were responding to some of these questions, he's saying, look, you're asking questions that relate to the higher initiation, so obviously I cannot respond. With Sinnott in his esoteric Buddhism, I think there was there were those kinds of questions being asked, and the master said, no, these are secrets of the higher initiations. I cannot respond. Or cannot give you those secrets, certainly. Gemini, as you may now begin to grasp, is related to the etheric body. Yes, of course, it's the third in sequence, so mind, emotions, etheric, but so is Aquarius. And you can go backwards, in a way. Or would it be forward? Well, I mean, you know, because Aries is related to mind, Gemini to the astral body, and Aquarius to the etheric body, and Capricorn then to the dense physical. Again, moving backwards, beginning from Aries, although you can also begin from Pisces as sign number one. Gemini, as you may now begin to grasp, is related to the etheric body. It is the custodian of conditioning energy, and the intermediary, as far as basic essentials are concerned, between soul and body. Well, maybe body here is the etheric. Or should we say the etheric body is an intermediary between the soul and the dense physical body. So the custodian of basic attractive and repulsive energies, let's just call them that, basic attractive and repulsive energies, and the intermediary, as far as basic essentials are concerned, I think it has a lot to do with the kind of interplay. Let's just say controlling interplay in the etheric body, as does Mercury on a lower turn of the spiral. On the lower turn of the spiral, controlling interplay and interplay between soul and body, Gemini as the intermediary, with the higher of the opposites being soul and the lower being body. So always a secondary intermediary position, linking two and making it possible for them to affect each other, though possibly not merge with each other, as Libra seems to be the sign which produces the true merging. And because it produces the true merging, it would seem that Libra has a lot of the second ray connected with it. There are the two allied brothers. These are the two allied brothers, producing on their own high level an interplay between that which is molecular and that which is atomic. In other words, from the first plane comes everything. A Fohat, when it descends, affects the first plane and creates the basic constituents, but then comes the second outpouring, which brings about the molecular combinations, and somehow Gemini represents the one and the six, archetypally. And when we take it down to our level of planes, represents one plane and six planes, one principle and six principles. The first principle, I guess, is Atma, and all the others descend from it. I'm not yet talking about the Atman, which is not really a principle, but is life itself. These are the two allied brothers. In the average person, the etheric vehicle is the transmitter of psychic energy. Meaning, I suppose, energy from the astral body, galvanizing and coordinating the dense physical body through motive and desire, I suppose, and permitting, therefore, astral and mental control of the personality. Well, maybe psychic energy is more. Maybe psychic energy is the energy of the subtle bodies, both lower mind and emotions. And again, of course, the psyche, in a more authentic sense, is considered to include the kinds of energies which occur on the higher mental plane. But there is, you know, when we talk about the subtle nature of man, the subtle bodies, we generally are speaking of the emotional and lower mental. That's his psyche. And the physical energies, the energy of what we call vital energy, is the vital body, ruled by Gemini. And sort of an intermediary here between Cancer, which rules the outer man, and sources on the higher planes, Taurus, Aries, and whatever we can say rules the soul body per se. Leo? Well, Capricorn? A number of signs are included, and really all the 12 signs are included because the egoic lotus has 12 petals. When the man is upon the path of discipleship and therefore upon the reversed wheel, let's just say as he begins to strive to learn about and obey the higher of the pairs of opposites, he's on the path of at least probationary discipleship, and maybe when the fifth petal is completely unfolded and the first initiation occurs, he's on the path of discipleship proper. Upon the reverse wheel leading to initiation, the etheric body becomes the transmitter of soul energy. So indeed, he was not yet talking about soul energy in this earlier section. The etheric body becomes the transmitter of soul energy and not of personality force. Personality force is involved here in the Aries-Taurus part. And, well, Cancer in a way rules the entire personality, and Leo, of course, can represent the dominant integrated personality. But in general, let's just say the personality elemental tends to drive, to feed the force, the energies, the higher energies, or whatever energies, to feed the chakras below the diaphragm. So on the path of discipleship, the etheric body is supposed to be carrying soul energy through interpenetration along with all the other energies. The powerful effect of the secondary of love, wisdom, correlated with the generic aspect of the soul, we might say, the powerful effect of the secondary of love, wisdom, working through the subjective six rays. Notice that one always works through six. Isn't that interesting? According to ray type and subjective six rays, well, could this be or could this indicate the type of soul sub-ray which has its root on the higher mental plane, and not just the ray of the personality, not just the ray of personality, rod of power, the ray of the personality considered as a subray of the soul. You know what I'm talking about here, that the soul has a couple of different kinds of subrays. The personality is always considered a subray of the soul, and there's also, I think, generated from the soul plane or stimulated on that plane from above, a secondary ray, which is considered a soul ray. So the other six rays, the subjective six rays, the second ray of love, wisdom, the major synthetic ray, works through them. It could even work through a secondary sub-ray, a second sub-ray. The etheric body becomes the transmitter of soul energy and not a personality force when a man's on the path of discipleship, having reversed the wheel. There's a different flow within the etheric body of the energies once you reverse the wheel. The powerful effect of the second ray of love wisdom from Gemini works through the subjective six rays. So there will be sub-rays, and also through itself. According to the ray type, beings begin steadily to dominate the vital body. So what does that? The powerful effect of the second ray of love wisdom, which is generic to the soul, found generically in relation to the soul, working through the subjective six rays, in the which will decide a man's secondary ashram, according to ray type, begins to dominate the vital body. So the major, second, and all kinds of other rays produce their pattern of domination in the etheric body on the reverse wheel. Producing consequently the shift of force and of intensity to the centers above the diaphragm. That's really what it means to reverse the wheel, considered in etheric terms. That the higher energy does not pass through the higher centers and anchor themselves in the lower, but that this anchored energy in the lower is drawn up into the higher, where it there activates the higher centers. Hence, Gemini seems to be involved in that mutability, which is causing this shift. The power of the personality lessens and wanes because the lower chakras, which are personality correlated with the, in a way, the solar plexus being the main correlating chakra there of the entire personality, power of the personality lessens and wanes, whilst the soul power, soul, waxes and grows. There is much to be learned from the study of the dual activity, higher and lower, involved here as well. Is the transfer of energy from the sacral to the throat, from the solar plexus to the heart, and from the base of the spine center eventually to the highest center, the center of purpose, the head center. There is much to be learned from the study of the dual activity, higher and lower, of the etheric body and its relation to the responsiveness of the constellation Gemini, but it is too abstruse for the ordinary student. Well, let's be safe and consider ourselves kind of the ordinary student. We can obviously speculate, but you can see this fluctuation occurring, this reversal of the wheel, this reversal of the way the energies in the etheric body go, and this attraction and repulsion of energies under Gemini, and the drawing up of energies under Gemini. So the ray types begin to dominate the etheric body, and according to the ray type, different triangles, chakras in different triangles will be activated at different times. It's always with soul infusion, the second ray of love wisdom, that is generically dominating, but according to the subsidiary rays, the other soul rays, so to speak, the etheric body will be organized. Maybe in the soul phase of organization, it will always have some kind of generic relationship between the chakras, but according to the soul rays, there will be a secondary organization, and he calls these subjective rays. So because they are subjective, they are at least occurring on the level of soul. Because these subjective rays are subjective, they will be, for practical purposes, originating on the plane of soul. According to ray type, begin to dominate the causal body, causing its own sort of dynamics and geometry, producing consequently the shift of force and intensity to the centers above the diaphragm. So Gemini is involved in the three major transfers, isn't it? Gemini is involved in the three major transfers. The power of the personality or the subdiaphragmatic energies lessens. The power of the higher centers grows. Personality elemental energy is not so much found anymore in the etheric body, or less of it. And soul energies are found in the etheric body. There is much to be learned from the dual activity, higher and lower, of the etheric body. In other words, the interplay between super and subdiaphragmatic energies. Let me write that down as soon as I can find the cursor. Higher and lower of the etheric body, i.e. the interplay between subdiaphragmatic energies and super diaphragmatic energies. Diaphragmatic, we say. Okay, so there is a Geminian interplay and Mercurian interplay going on there. But this is far too abstruse for the ordinary student. It is nevertheless an esoteric fact to be borne in mind and will someday be of real service to the astrology of the future, which will help us make these transfers, I suppose. Helping us make these transfers of energy in the etheric body. And maybe in between the chakras of the still subtler bodies, because I suppose energy transferences have to be made there too. For someday, astrology will be lifted. There's that word suggesting above the diaphragm, lifted to a higher plane. Right now, people are so concerned about their personality life, that's where astrology seems to focus. True interpretation will come, I suppose, from the perspective of the soul, and true healing, which Gemini is also involved with, producing the rightful flows of energy in the etheric body, where much congestion, usually, or dearth, causes disease. True interpretation will come in true healing in all departments of human living through a proper understanding of the available potencies and energies pouring into the planet at any particular time. So it's largely, let's just say, ill health is the result of the mismanagement of energies. They may be available, but they are not wisely used. And so congestion and dearth or absence is the result. Too much, excess or privation. And these are the causes of ill health. Okay, well, I've gone on a little longer here. Haven't quite disciplined myself as much as I should. I did want to finish that paragraph. About 5 minutes over. And I will say this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 101B. Always looking for the page, right? And I must have missed it. Maybe it'll be easier to find above. Well, it's page something, isn't it? Why can't I find it? Well, the way to find this is, I suppose, to go too abstruse for the ordinary student. So I'll just put that in over here, esoteric astrology, and I'll put in the words too abstruse for the ordinary student, and we're on page 353. All right. And that should actually, you know, oh, there it is right in front of me. All right. So this is page 353. And we'll see whether we continue, let's say, beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 101C, or maybe it'll have to be 102A, page 353, depending on how much time there is. Okay, friends, we will let off for just a little while here. And move on as we can.